Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Searstrom, and this is Financial Survival that you're listening to. And I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Some of the things that we'll be discussing today, it is Monday, March 4th, 2013. And we're going to be talking about eating. We're going to be talking about reservations. And are you going to need reservations to go out and eat at various places? You know, some of these restaurants like the Red Lobster or Olive Garden, you're going to need reservations. And we're going to be talking about QE3 and the economy. But first, we're going to go and see what the markets are doing today. Gold struggled again today. And, you know, it's up every morning, early trading. It's always up. And it was up for most of the morning by a couple bucks. 1574 on the day at down 3. You have silver down 6, 2862. You have platinum down 3 at 1573. And you have palladium down 4 at $721. You got all kinds of predictions going on out there. Oh, we're going to 1300. Oh, we're going to, this is going to be over by such and such a date. And oh, this is going to go on till next month. And oh, this is going to, folks. You know, if you listen to everybody, you're just going to be confused. You buy the fundamentals and you stay with it. It is that simple. And I got a great comparison here right after the first break that we're going to be talking about on some of our items and the coins if you would have purchased when gold was a little bit higher. But first, let's continue on with the market report. You have the U.S. dollar day trading a little bit lower, 0.06 at 82.21. Crude oil today down 70 cents, broke down 90 at 89.98. And let's see, the Dow was up 38 points today at 14,127. NASDAQ up 12 at 31.82. S&P up 7 at 15.25. And see, those big old budget cuts weren't going to do anything to the markets. You know, everybody's happy, everybody's buying. Everybody, be happy. Don't worry. 3 hours today on CNBC, Warren Buffett. It was about to make you sick. And I didn't think he was looking all that healthy. But, 3 hours. Come on. Who can listen to that guy for 3 hours? 10-year yield today up a little bit, 0.02 at 1.88. And oil, I mentioned oil. What else is going on? Euro still at 1.30. Give us a call, folks, for all your gold and silver coin needs at 1-800-375-4188. That is 1-800-375-4188. If you have any questions for today's program, make sure you send them to questions at dgscoins.com. Questions at dgscoins.com. And if you'd rather just pick up the phone and call us, 800-596-8191. That is 800-596-8191 for your questions for the program. Not your gold and silver, but your questions for today's program. Hi, Al.
Hi, Melody. You got a little of that scene. You had a senior moment here, Melody.
I did?
Well, one of us did. I don't know if you had it or I had it, but one of us had a senior motive.
You're older than I am.
No, I'm older, but just the same, Melody. I'm not.
What?
Either you had one or I had one. Well, you got to talking about gold, but I don't think you gave them the price on gold or silver or platinum or palladium.
I certainly did. You weren't paying any attention.
You sure about that?
Yes, I did.
Like I said, somebody had a senior moment, and I wasn't sure which one of us it was. But
well, you're older, so you can
well,
have
I know,
that.
I'm most likely candidate, but just the same, I didn't hear that.
Yes, yes, yes. Get your ginkgo. Get your ginkgo.
I'm going to listen to the I believe you. Not that I doubt your word. I want you to understand that. But just the same, I'm going to listen to the recording of the program when the program is over. I'm going to find out if you really did or did not.
Yeah, well, here's a caller that's paying attention. He says, tell Al to get on the stick, all right? So there you go. Thank you, Ken.
How old is Ken?
I don't know how old.
Find out how old Ken is. I
that doesn't
find
have
out.
Anything to do I with
I want to find. Yeah, it does. It has something to do with a senior moment thing. I just It may be that we've just witnessed something like a simultaneous mass senior moment across all of radio.
You think? I don't think.
It may be that we just had some kind of a national blackout where everybody over a certain age didn't hear what was actually said.
Got to be the government.
I think so. I think so. I think it's the fluoride in the drinking water, or maybe the harp, or I don't know what it is, but something. All right.
March 4th, spring. We're going to have 47 degrees on Saturday. I can't remember if it's Saturday or Sunday, this coming weekend. And the sun is even going to be out. I'm so happy.
That's good.
So happy. Yay. Maybe I'll make a reservation.
Well, and maybe you won't need any. That's part of the point to the question. Will you need? Let me just scroll up here to this thing. Will you need a reservation to eat dinner tonight at Red Lobster Olive Garden? And the answer is no. You probably won't. You should be able to walk in, get a table anytime you like. According to Mitch Shedlock, he publishes Mitch's Global Economic Report, and I like his work. I admire he's knowledgeable and intelligent, a good writer, and writes that. But he's reporting that high gasoline prices, coupled with 2% payroll tax hikes, is going to take a bite out of restaurant sales this year. For some chains, the slump has already started. Consider Darden Restaurants. The owner of Olive Garden, Red Garden, or Red Lobster, Longhorn Steakhouse. Darden restaurant traffic is down an average of 4.5%, with Red Lobster leading the pack down 7.5%. At Olive Garden, smaller, cheaper plates are on the way. According to Ms. Shedlock, the main problem is saturation. He says that he sees endless miles of restaurants on strips nearby. Those restaurants include Steak and Shake, Red Lobster, Olive Garden, Pizza Hut, Subway, China Express, Chili's, Chipotle, Panera and other chains intermixed with some local eateries. And he's right. We have the same thing in Dallas. There were areas where there were just rows of restaurants. And you'd go in and you stop at one restaurant. If you didn't want to go there, go to the next one. You get everything you want within who knows, maybe a half a mile along the road. And they liked the competition. Everybody went to that same area, and they did well being located, the restaurants located right next to each other. They did for years. It wasn't something where you wanted to be a restaurant out in the wilderness all by yourself where everybody came to you because they had no place else to go. It was better to be in the midst of other restaurants where you had so much diversity that people could drive in and, do you want Chinese? You want steak? What do you want? Lobster? It's all there. And it worked, but now it's not. Mr. Shedlock is complaining that the main problem is saturation, meaning there's too many restaurants on these strips along the road. But by saturation, Mr. Shedlock implies that we've recently built too many restaurants. And now the supply of restaurants has oversaturated the consumer's demand. But how can the main problem be saturation? All of these restaurant chains were doing fine a few years ago. So far as I know, there hasn't been a restaurant building boom in the last 5 years. That means the problem is not an oversupply of restaurants. It's not restaurant saturation. But rather, the problem is that we now have too few customers. Now, this is just obvious. This isn't enormous insight per se, but it's the sort of thing where I'm surprised that Mish looks at it from the perspective of saturation, because it implies too many restaurants. Problem's not too many restaurants. It's too little demand. That simply implies that the consequences of inflation, rising prices, rising unemployment, economic decline, and a falling standard of living are impacting those restaurants' business models. In other words, restaurants have been built over the years based on a business model that assumes a certain level of economic activity and a certain standard of living. Those assumptions are now proving to be false. We don't have as much economic activity in the nation as those restaurants were designed to accommodate. We don't have a standard of living. We no longer have a standard of living that those restaurants were designed to accommodate. As a result, we don't have as many customers going through the doors. Therefore, the restaurants' business models are failing, and many restaurants are going to go broke. And the same situation is going, and the same analysis will probably apply to a number of other businesses besides restaurants. Hard to say what's going to follow restaurants, but restaurants are taking it now. Retail sales, they're going to suffer this way. And it's not news, it's not just happening, but it's more evidence that the economy is not recovering. The allegations that we have a recovery, all right? The recovery is in progress. The recovery is just around the corner. No, it's not. We've got a problem here, and it's not going to be easily resolved. And restaurant traffic is just one of the leaves in the breeze. Gives us a clue to what's going on in the economy, and it's not a good sign. What do you think, Melody? You going to get a reservation for dinner tonight at Red Lobster, or
no.
Just take your chances and walk in?
No. Well, you know, people just don't have the disposable income that that's were talking exactly about on Friday.
Yep.
And whatever they do purchase, they've been purchasing more things, I think, that they need, and maybe not so much. They're eating home. They're not eating out anymore. They used to eat out four nights a week. Now it might be four nights a month. So certainly.
Do you think this means we'll have less obese people in this country?
No, unfortunately, what happens is, I believe, as a country becomes poorer, yes, I think it goes through stages, but I think perhaps you can have both working at the same time. As a wealthy nation, sure, people bring in more food, so to speak, more calories and so forth as a good life, but also when you're poor, you end up eating things that are stretched a little bit further, which is usually more starches and other items. So you can see obesity happen there too in a very poor, when people are poor, you can still see obesity just because of what they can afford to eat. They buy things like pasta and things that will have a tendency to put weight on. So you can see, so you could basically have both things working together. So
also, no, as poor people, you don't actually do as much work.
That's true.
All right. If you're unemployed, mostly what you're doing is sitting on the couch watching TV. And that's probably more conducive to gaining weight. I don't have as much money, but on the other hand, I'm gaining weight because I don't have as much activity.
Well, I think
so. It's kind of an interesting.
It's a combination of two, but
yeah, I agree.
I think, you know, people cut back. You know, they don't they buy what they can afford to purchase and stretch it. So we saw that.
In any case, we won't need a we won't need a reservation to go to Red Lobster tonight. That's probably the case. I'm not even sure if they're open on Mondays. Is Red Lobster open on Mondays, Melody?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. You don't have much of a... You don't get out much either then, do you?
No, I don't.
Uh-huh. Well, neither do I. It wouldn't matter.
I ate at the Red Lobster about 3 years ago. The food was horrible, and I never went back.
Well, I haven't been to Red Lobster in, I'll bet you, a decade. Maybe more than that. I don't remember last
time. The last time I ate at the Olive Garden... I found out that they don't even have a chef. All their food is frozen. And it's like, what? Yes. So they get all their food frozen. The food, from what I understood, they actually make the food like over in Italy or someplace, and they freeze it and ship it over, and it's distributed frozen. So it's just like, you got to be kidding me. So I never went back.
Well, I don't know where they make the food, but it's pretty interesting that you could afford, that it's cheaper to have, I don't know where they, I don't know what
it's the only way they would be able to do it so inexpensive. But I don't think the Olive Garden would lie to me. Like, why would he tell me they don't even have chefs there? It's frozen food.
Maybe he was getting ready to quit. Maybe he just didn't want to work there anymore, and he was intentionally misinforming the customers about the quality of the food. You never know.
The quality wasn't bad. It was just frozen food.
Yeah. Now, I remember the same thing last time I was in Olive Garden. I'll bet you it's at least 10 years ago. And maybe the solution to the problem, they were talking about this one restaurant chain, maybe the solution to the problem is to increase the quality. You know, when I was living in Dallas, I'm not there anymore, but I've been there for, I don't know, since 1983, something. Yeah, since 1983. So I'd been there basically 30 years, something like that, 25, 30 years. Problem you had, Dallas really didn't have many good restaurants. They had a bunch of corporate restaurants, and you can taste it. You can go into these places, and the food is just, it's as if it's been produced by a computer. And they make calculations, and they average out what everybody wants, and they make food that is kind of bland and kind of nondescript. And you get done with it, and yeah, you filled your belly and the rest of it. But it wasn't like, I lived in Chicago for years, and you could get good food in Chicago because you had a lot of these mom-and-pop restaurants, and there was something distinctive about the food. You might like it one place and not like it another place, but you could find places that you really liked. Dallas was all corporate. Same thing is going on with these restaurants we're just now complaining about. They have great advertising and so on, Olive Garden, Red Lobster. But I think they have too many computers and not enough chefs. And I think too many computers spoils the soup. It's not so many chefs, too many chefs spoil the soup. It's too many computers spoil the soup. You wind up eating something and, you know, why go back? So who knows? Maybe we're going to see more mom-and-pop restaurants and more distinctive flavors and original cooking. And before we're done, you know, it might be a good thing. We're going to time out for Dadisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We're going to take a break for a couple of minutes, and we will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Now, Melody has confused me. That's getting easier to do with each passing day. But Melody has confused me, and I don't think she's got a special, but she does have a special comparison. So, Melody, if now is the time to...
Yes, Al.
All right. Explain what makes this comparison special.
In the past, we were running a special where if you purchased a $20 gold piece at regular price, you could purchase a 1 ounce gold eagle at $20 over spot price.
And $20?
$20 over spot, yes. That is a special. This is a two-coin special, $20 gold piece at regular price, and the one-ounce gold eagle at $20 over spot. Okay. So if we went back to February 19th, we had spot gold at $1,605. If you purchased 20 one-ounce gold eagles, they were $1,690 each. Your total came to $33,800. That same special today with the markup in what you have with gold eagles, it would be about $680 less. That's because we had a $34 correction on spot gold. Now, when you look at a $34 correction, I don't think it's any big deal. $680 on a $33,000 order, it's not so bad. So, not a bad trade. But on that same day, if you purchase 10 of the Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces and 10 of the 1 ounce gold eagles at the reduced price of $20 over spot, your loss would have been half, $340, than the 20 1 ounce gold eagles. So basically, you did lose half of the loss with the correction of gold. So you had a correction of gold of $35 on spot. And the original purchase of 20 gold eagles, you would have had a loss of $680. And with the splitting of the $20 gold pieces and gold eagles, still the same amount of coins, there was only a $340 correction on your order. But if you purchased 10 $20 gold pieces today And if you purchase that same special on the 1 ounce Gold Eagle coins at regular price, you would have actually made $310. That would cost you $310 more today. So it just goes to show you what a really great value that special we've been giving on the $20 gold pieces at regular price, and you get a reduction in price on the 1 ounce Gold Eagles, $20 over spot price. You can't beat those prices anywhere, and just this comparison just only confirms how great of a deal that is. In fact, we had a $34 correction on spot, and my $20 gold pieces haven't corrected at all. So they're going for the same price today as they did back on 219. So I know that seems like maybe a little complicated comparison. My point to all of this is if you purchase the $20 gold pieces along with the 1 ounce Gold Eagle coins, you have a much better purchase, a much better portfolio than if you bought 20 1 ounce Gold Eagle coins. People think I'm saving money on the Gold Eagles. You're getting but here the comparison, it shows you would have actually done better by purchasing $20 gold pieces.
All right.
So they can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And we'll go back to that special offering the Mint State $20 gold piece. It can be any Mint State coin at regular price, along with a 1 ounce Gold Eagle coin at $20 over spot.
Well, I don't quite know what to say, Melody. Sounds like a good deal. People ought to take advantage of it, but they're probably going to have to. I think they're going to probably need a little more explanation before they're done.
That's fine. That's what we're here for. They can give us a call at 800-375-4188.
Okay. What's next, Melody?
We have a question in from Richard. He says, how can the government take a 401k and IRA account for bond purchases? Wouldn't that collapse the stock market because they have to sell the stocks? Wouldn't people become irate because they destroyed their housing price, stole their Social Security, destroyed their income, interest income? Wouldn't there be an uproar?
You know, it's an interesting question from this perspective. We should have had an uproar probably 20 years ago, and we haven't had it yet. And the government is betting that we'll never have an uproar. They're betting that they can just keep on looting the public's wealth in the name of supporting the government, and that they can continue to do this almost indefinitely. I'm sure they're aware of limits. I know they're aware that the natives are getting restless. But from the government's perspective, they are going to continue, in my opinion, to try to take money from the lower classes, middle classes, maybe even the upper classes, but I'd say mostly the lower and middle classes. They're going to continue looting those portions of the economy until the public just screams and maybe even bullets start to fly, at which point the government might back off. What I'm getting to, at least in part, is that we have some sort of a blind spot as Americans when it comes to government. We have this idiotic idea that we can't possibly survive without the government. And every time we have one of these problems, the government, now we've gone through the sequestration. We're starting on sequestration. Government under sequestration is going to cut its spending by 3%. And they're making a big production out of it. If you and I have to cut our spending by 3%, the government thinks that's no problem. If they raise payroll taxes by 2%, no problem. We'll just dump that on all the peons out there who pay taxes. But it is a presumed that if the government has any sort of financial stress, well, we've got to impose that stress on the people of this country, and there is something wrong with that mindset. Somewhere along the line, people have to begin to realize that government is not essential. Government is fundamentally parasitical. It is something that we often don't need and in many instances can't even endure. And the larger it gets, the poorer we are. And yet, every time, oh my gosh, government's having a financial problem. Let's raise taxes. or lower services or borrow more money, but we've got to keep government going, and it's part of a mindset that is going to end. It has to end. It's right for it to end. When it's going to end, I don't know. So in terms of the question, at least a major part of the question you just read, when are we going to see the public uproar? I have no idea. All right? I don't know. But I'll say this. We can look at situations like the Arab Spring in 2011, where all of a sudden demonstrations broke out, and I believe it was 11 different countries in the Middle East, and if I recall correctly, four governments were overthrown. And it just happened, bang! It was like catastrophic failure on one of these aircraft that's made out of a new material where all of a sudden, bang, the wing just falls off the airplane. It doesn't break a little. It just suddenly snaps. It's gone. The airplane is flying with one wing, and of course that means it's flying toward the ground. Something like that is conceivable. And you can bet that the government will continue to take money and then take more money and then take more money. And they will, every time you give them $5, they're encouraged that they can take 10. And when they take 10, they believe they can get 20. And they have ultimately a false confidence. It will drive them to where they go too far. And sooner or later, there's going to be, we're going to see that public uproar. But it's hard to say when. So will the events that were posed in the question, will they create a public uproar? I kind of hope so. You know, it's a little bit like Iceland. They had a public uproar back a few years ago when it turned out their government was bankrupt. And they said, well, we just have to raise taxes on all you dummies so we can pay our bills. And the dummy said, no. Pay your own damn bills. We're not paying them. They just refused. They had a difficult 18, 24 months. And now they're one of the stronger economies. They're just a little community in their own sense. It's hard to say they're exactly an economy, but they're doing well. They're doing better than most of Europe. Something like that needs to be done in this country where people just sit back and recognize the government is not God. We don't have to give it every dime we ever made. Well, and sooner or later, that's going to come, but it may be difficult times. It may be a difficult circumstance before we get there. What else, Melody?
We're going to be talking about G or QE.
QE?
QE.
QE or not to QE?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the question?
That is the question.
This is an article, I believe it was the New York Times. The headline is Bernanke, Federal Reserve bond buying is bearing fruit, will stay in place. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben S. Bernanke reaffirmed the central bank's commitment to its massive stimulus program on Tuesday. This would be almost 2 weeks ago now, tamping down speculation about a pullback that spooked the stock markets 2 weeks ago. Testifying before the Senate Banking Committee, Bernanke said the benefits of the Fed's efforts to keep interest rates near zero are clear. Sales of homes, autos, and other durable goods have rebounded. That has helped reduce unemployment and build household wealth, which in turn fuels the engine of the economy, consumer spending. One of us, I don't know. You know, it may be that I'm just having another senior moment, but maybe Bernanke's having senior moments himself. How can the engine of the economy be consumer spending? Because there's a problem with this. We shouldn't have consumer spending. That can't be the engine of the economy. The truth is, it's more likely to be the death of the economy if we are basing the economy on consumer spending. Wouldn't it be better if the engine of the economy was producer spending? You see what I'm talking about here, folks? Given that we no longer produce as much as we did, producer spending has been replaced by consumer spending. Consumers are those who merely consume but need not produce. Welfare, subsidy, and grant recipients are consumers. Government employees are consumers. But how long can we continue to consume if we don't produce? We can't have an economy that's based on, hooray, let's give more money to people that are unemployed, and then they'll be consumers, and that will somehow stimulate the economy. What we need to stimulate the economy is producers, not consumers. And when we have producer spending instead of consumer spending, then we will truly be on our way back to prosperity. But as long as we rely on consumers to get us out of this mess, I mean, that's just as dumb as borrowing more money to get out of debt, and that's what we're doing. The article continues, but critics of the central bank's policy, including some Fed officials, have warned that years of ultra-low interest rates and the Fed's purchase of billions of dollars in bonds each month may lead to serious unintended consequences such as inflation. On Tuesday, Bernanke directly addressed those concerns and promised that the Fed would keep its easy money politics or policies in place as long as needed. All right, that means inflation. They're determined to continue inflating the currency. That is what he's telling us, point one. But this newspaper account that talks about unintended consequences such as inflation, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Inflation is not an unintended consequence. We've had persistent inflation throughout my lifetime. A single stick of chewing gum that cost a penny when I was a kid now sells for 11 or 12 cents. You could buy an ounce of silver as recently as 1968 for $1. Today you'll pay $30. That's evidence that the dollar since 1968 has depreciated in value due to inflation by 97% or thereabouts. The government's not going to quit inflation. They talk about unintended consequences such as inflation. It's not unintended. It's what they want. We harp on it on this program on a fairly regular basis, but they want inflation in order to rob the creditors, in order to pay off the government's debt with cheaper dollars. They want it. They're going to make it happen as long as there's one more tree in the forests of Brazil, as long as there's one more gram of ink to produce one more paper dollar, the government will inflate currency. They won't stop inflating until they've lost control. If we go into real deflation, that'll mean now we're going to see some real trouble. We're going to see real trouble if the government can't inflate the currency. But to call it an unintended consequence is just nonsense. They've intended it all along. It's a fundamental reason for QE1, QE2, QE3. Inflate, discount gold and silver, 1-800-375-4188. I guess we can take our caller right now, Melody. That other story makes me so mad I can't hardly see straight. Sometimes just the lies and the nonsense just wears me out at times. You know that?
I understand. We have Ivan calling.
I'm actually only about 25 years old. You know that, Melody. It's dealing with all this information. It's turned me into a senior citizen. It's not biology. It's not nature. It's nurture. That's what's doing it. It's all this news making me old before my time, Melody. What's Yvonne got?
Well, good afternoon, Al and Melody.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Ivan.
Everyone is well for Monday morning, for Monday afternoon, let's say. I make a comment on this Arab Spring you mentioned earlier in a show. Since it occurred in 10 or 11 countries simultaneously, wouldn't you think that this was an organized effort to destabilize the Middle East?
I think it started spontaneously. That's what I think. No one could have predicted this. But once the ball got rolling, once it started, there's no telling what might have happened. It started in 1, 2, 3 countries, and it may be that other forces then jumped in and said, we can make this happen in, who knows, 5, 8, 11 countries. There may have been manipulation after the ball got bouncing, but it still fed off a fundamental problem. It was real at bottom, in my opinion. It may be exploited, exaggerated, additionally that, but there's a fundamental reality there. What do you think about it, Yvonne?
Well, I think that that was pretty well, that it was organized from the beginning in order to destabilize the whole Middle East for one reason or another, but it was in order to destroy Libya, which was going on gold standard as far as their central bank was concerned. Same thing with Syria now. You have Iraq. Saddam Hussein was also going out of the dollar, petrodollars, into gold and other euro and other monetary items. So that in order to take control of these countries, which were not part of the federal bank, etc., here and in EU, IMF, and so on, that this was done in order to destroy their currency and take over also their natural resources. So I think that was the intent. Plus, another thing is, of course, you had Syria, which is a strong ally of Iran and Russia and China, and Hezbollah, which is kind of a ring around Israel, which was needed to be broken. Okay, and we see that what's happening in Syria, the killings and murders and so on by the rebels. And again, it was all premeditated, just like about Saddam having the weapons of mass destruction and so on. Same thing with Muammar Gaddafi. And so, I mean, it just seems like that this was all prearranged in order to, like I said, to destabilize and also neutralize countries which were veering off their petrodollar and were anti-U.S. and anti-Israel, in essence. And I think this is what we see, like I said before, in Syria, and that's why Russia and China see that the West, including NATO, is putting the footprint, you know, now in Mali and Sudan and Yemen, and again, it's just for the self satisfaction in order to gain all the mineral resources of these countries.
I'm not sure what their rationale is, but your analysis, you mention who you think might be the perpetrators behind this, but you mostly, you spent some time analyzing the situation, expressing your perspective on it, but you didn't quite name who are they, meaning who are the ones who are causing that are manipulating and causing these countries to be destabilized. Give us the name.
Well, it would be probably U.S.-Israeli connection. It would be Mossad, CIA, and part of the NATO EU, which are the culprits who are causing this destabilization. And so that's what I see as being the culprits coordinating these bloody massacres and killings throughout the Middle East.
What do you think is the future for Egypt over the course of the next, say, 3 years?
Well, and that's another good point. Kerry was there, and he gave them some more billions, okay? Egypt is, I think, will eventually revert back to either a dictatorship one way or the other. You see, some countries need what they call, quote-unquote, benevolent dictators, okay, like Italy and so on. I mean, you see what's happening in Italy. And some of these other countries do need a strong leader, okay, compared to a democracy or republic or whatever, you know. In fact, we don't have a democracy here, if you go by definition of the Greek philosophers, okay?
Yeah, we have a representative democracy is what we have, which is essentially an aristocracy. You got 535 men in Congress plus the president and the vice president that are essentially running this country as an aristocracy rather than a democracy. A representative democracy is essentially an aristocracy. But my reading on Egypt is this. I don't think there's going to – I don't even anticipate a single dictator to run Egypt in the near future. Egypt was essentially allowed – to maintain a cohesive nation under Mubarak. So long as Mubarak, he anchored U.S. policy in the Middle East by agreeing that he would not go after Israel.
Right.
When Mubarak left, and it looked like Israel, and it looked like Egypt might become more aggressive toward Israel, they could no longer count on Mubarak's support. At that point, my guess would be, if I were Israeli, I'd do everything I could to destabilize Egypt. I would cause it to disintegrate if I were Israeli, and I believe that's what they're doing. I doubt that we will see a cohesive nation in Israel much longer. I'm inclined to think that it'll break down. I'm not saying that it would turn into, divide into two, three, four separate nations, but I'm saying it could go in a regional basis where it's almost incapable of national action of the sort that's required if it's going to mount an attack on Israel. I think they're going to keep them defragmented, and that means, or keep them fragmented, not defragmented, fragmented, disintegrated, and in order to protect Israel, and that means the people of Egypt are headed for enormous poverty. They're already deeply impoverished, but it's going to get worse. You can anticipate violence, revolution. So I'm curious. Does that make any sense to you? And in part, let me just say one other point. I read the overthrow of Mubarak to be primarily a natural action. I don't see it as motivated by external forces to a significant degree. I'm sure everybody tried to push and pull one way or the other, but I think that happened because Egypt was under a lot of stress. They couldn't feed the people properly, and Mubarak got thrown out. But now, I'm going to make you a bet that external forces are going to keep Egypt divided. I don't even think they'll be able to hold a real dictatorship together. Does that make any sense to you, Yvonne?
Yeah. Overall, I agree that for some way, or rather that the destabilization occurs and some fragmentation, of course, is taking place, in particular, like I say, Syria and Egypt. But I don't know why it would have went over to the Muslim Brotherhood, because they are not a majority. The majority is you have other Islam and Christian units or your parts of the nation or populace who are in a majority, but somehow someone did push to get the Muslim Brotherhood in there in order to again control it. Now, they never broke the treaty with Israel, of course. The peace treaty is still in effect, just like with Jordan. And so, in essence, I think they just switched. It's like in Russia, okay? When Russia fell apart, they just switched the codes and made some, you know, make it like more democratic now. Here we have a little different, but still a switch occurred between Mohammed, between Mubarak and Morsi, and but I agree that now that there are some external forces trying to keep Egypt destabilized and probably fragmented, as you indicated, in order to, you know, not to be a part of a coalition against Israel. Okay, and
I agree.
Certainly,
I agree.
They are doing that to Israel, to Syria, and they are pushing very hard. I mean, they are putting money. Obama just gave another $60 million to the rebels and Saudi Arabia and some of these other countries, which are really autocratic, you know, Qatar, Kuwait, and so on, and Saudi Arabia. And, you know, and they, you know, if you talk about democracy, pushing democracy, I mean, we are not doing anything about there. The women don't even have the right to drive, you know. So there, I think we are overlooking certain things, but we are picking on others and pointing the little thing in their eye, like the Bible says. That,
I think it's just a question of trying to find out who's going to take orders. And they don't care whether they are, again, the Muslim Brotherhood. You suggest that someone has given the Muslim Brotherhood enough extra push from the outside to take control of Egypt, even though they're a minority. Who do you think that outside force is?
Well, it could be U.S. or Israel, any of them. You know, I would say probably U.S. would be.
I would agree with you. And in fact, I saw a report just lately that makes that allegation. They're saying the Muslim Brotherhood is at the top. It's controlled ultimately by the United States, or at least deeply influenced. We're the ones that are controlling that thing. I mean, whole thing is just a puppet show.
Yep. Yep. No, I fully agree. I have one question. You know, since we are in a war in Syria, the Bible talks about one city which was never destroyed since inception. What is the city which will be eventually destroyed in the end times? You are a biblical.
I don't know. Are you talking about? You mentioned Syria, so I probably don't know. Are you talking about Babylon? That would have been the name that came to my mind.
No, Damascus.
Okay, I tell you what, though, you've got 10 seconds to give us a quick explanation of Damascus, because we're about out of time.
Well, in the Bible states that Damascus will be destroyed at the end of times, if you read Revelation. So I just, that's why I just asked you what. So, and there is the war there going on, so anyway.
All right, Yvonne, thank you for your call. We'll look forward to talking to you another time. In the meantime, got to say goodbye to all you folks. We are done for today. Bye-bye. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back with Roger Sales tomorrow. Melody and I will be back on Wednesday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you. Meet Melody, Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.